Well, good morning, friends, neighbors, countrymen, fellow countrymen, immigrants, all you new folks down in Texas and Arizona. Sorry we don't have a Spanish translator on board. We have to do this in English because I didn't pay that much attention in Spanish class. Well, I did. I had a really good teacher up there at Hayes Junior High School in St. Albans, West Virginia, Miss Goodwin. Isn't it funny how you can remember the names of teachers that you really liked? They kind of stick in your head for good reasons, good memories. And I can say, ¿Cómo está usted? Muy bien, gracias. ¿Y usted? No, muy bien. That's all I remember. Well, I can also count to 10. But we won't do that. I don't want to show off. I just want to talk about cars. You know, used vehicles are hot right now, obviously. There aren't many of them out there. Dealers are clamoring for used cars, going to auctions, and the auctions are, you know, very short affairs. You'll have 300 dealers show up and have, 250 cars, and it's just like feeling like on the USS Indiana, surrounded by sharks. That's not a good analogy. Anyway, let's just keep going. Used vehicles under the $15,000 price range are pretty much all but non-existent. Last year, they accounted for about 18% of the market. On average, five-year-old cars sold for roughly $24,000 in June. That is up 36.3% from an average of $17,636 a year ago. On a seven-year-old car, we're looking at average transaction prices of around $18,000. That's up 44.5%. To give you an example, a local example, a 2020 Ford F-250 Super Duty truck. Now, this is a, it's not the heaviest duty truck that we sell, but it is the next step over the 150, and people do a lot of work with these trucks. They come with diesel engines, or primarily diesel, the 6.7 diesel, but a lot of them have gasoline engines. Anyway, it sold for $60,785 last year. The inventory squeeze a year later has driven up the used vehicle sale price to $70,943 in July. That's according to Edmunds.com. A Subaru Crosstrek of the same year, 2020, sold for $26,804 new, but the crunch has driven up its price to over $30,082 in July. I've been watching a show from Australia, and that's the way they say dollars. Dollars. I love the Australian accent. I think it's really cool. Anyway, also the old adage that a vehicle depreciates drastically in value when it hits 100,000 miles, throw that one out the door as well, because higher mileage cars are selling like hotcakes, and I think there's a couple reasons for that. One is just the law of supply and demand, but the other is just the cars are made better and last longer. I remember when 100,000 miles meant the garbage heap and it was time for the recycler or whatever. Or did they do recycling back in the 70s? I don't know if they did or not. I don't think we cared. We just tossed it out the window, right? No, I didn't. These 100,000 mile cars, they're up 31% over the value last year. So do you call that a permanent thing? Do you call that inflation? It's definitely, market-driven. Is it permanent, though? I don't think so. I think the market is going to settle down. I think it's going to happen in housing as well, don't you? I mean, people can't continue to do what they're doing. Okay, so a guy just left my office, and he owned a cabin in Sevierville or Pigeon Forge area. And he was, I think he said originally his, like several years ago, it was appraised at around $200,000. He was recently offered $584,000 for that cabin. His good friend just completed a $500,000 log cabin. Sounds like a pretty fancy log cabin to me. A company came in, knocked on the door. He was still hanging pictures in the place and offered him, hold on, $1.7 million for this cabin. Apparently, there is this company that is going in and just buying cabins left and right. And I guess they're going to be using it for rentals or whatever. I wouldn't think they'd be able to flip it and make any money, but that's what's happening, and I just don't think that this is sustainable. I know that there's a lot of commentators are saying that they think that the higher prices are here to stay. And, you know, when you look at the three major things that people have expenses for, and that's housing, automobiles, and food, and then also gasoline, I guess you could throw that in the automobile category. I mean, we're talking about unbelievable price increases, 41% on used cars overall, and gasoline is up almost 45% versus the same time last year. So things are going great. And now the pandemic's coming back. I have lost two employees. Not lost. I mean, they're still alive and kicking, thank goodness. But two employees, younger guys, that have resisted getting the vaccine, and now they have COVID. And I don't know what you guys think about this, but I just feel like if I was getting ready to go into battle in some war and somebody said, hey, would you like a flak jacket? It's bulletproof, and they'd tell me, well, it's heavy, and you're not going to like it. It's probably make your shoulders hurt, and you could still get shot in the arm or the leg or maybe even your head if you're unlucky, but, you know, it could still probably save your life. I'm not going to say no to that. I am going to take that flak jacket or that bulletproof vest, and that's, you know, that same logic I think applies. I think the vaccine is not bulletproof. I think people can still get sick. Obviously, people with the vaccine are still getting sick, but I don't think they're getting as sick from what I'm hearing, and they're not dying. And maybe there are some exceptions to that, but, you know, I'm encouraging all of my people. I was going to put some guidelines in for them, but I was talked out of it by certain others that work in this organization. You know, they just felt like you shouldn't pay people to do what they should do on their own. You know, it's their health, and I agree with that. It's not really any of my business, but it can affect my business, right? So we're careful. We were careful throughout the whole pandemic. We had the face things on, you know, the shields up to separate customers from us. The plastic barriers, a lot of those are still up all over the place. We did stop wearing masks, and you know, now we're reevaluating that. So, you know, you just don't know how to respond. I'm just a small businessman, just like everybody else out there. And you know, you just have to make decisions that are, you know, I think there's two groups that you have to serve, your employees and your customers. I think businesses that don't think of both and they always think about the customer, they probably end up having a lot of turnover, don't you think? You got to take care of your people, because I've always believed, my dad taught me this lesson, is that happy people will deliver happy service. Maybe that's not always the case, but, you know, I'm going to go with it. So we'll take our first break and be back in just a minute. Okay, I am back. Lenny Lawson, the car guru, talking about cars and sharing some information that may or may not be fascinating to you. You know, I've seen a lot of cars come and go in my short career of 43 years. Brands is what I'm talking about. I think about, I was the Oldsmobile dealer for a while. I remember selling the Aurora. Remember that, Jewel? That's about when I became the dealer is when those were being sold. I never could understand the big deal, why they wanted to create a whole sub-brand under the name Aurora. I don't think it said Oldsmobile anywhere on it. I think they were afraid of their name or ashamed of it. But anyway, the brand eventually went away, and as did Pontiac and Hummer, and, you know, you can, the name Mercury, you know, we still have Lincoln, and they're doing pretty good right now. We're not a Lincoln dealer anymore, but we still service Lincolns and take care of our Lincoln customers. But I think about a couple brands that came onto the scene, and I just remember thinking that, well, if people can't pronounce it, they're not going to buy it. And I was kind of wrong about Hyundai. You know, early on, there were a lot of commercials say, how do you say Hyundai? Well, it rhymes with Sunday. Well, then why does it have a Y in it? You know, I wanted to call it Hyundai or something. But anyway, I didn't think it was going to last. I remember when, I don't know, we would trade for a Hyundai, and we knew that we better sell it fast because they would depreciate like right before your eyes. You can see it go down in value. Banks didn't even want to finance these cars because they depreciated so fast. And, you know, they just didn't seem to be made well. Well, boy, that's changed. I mean, even Consumer Reports loves the Hyundai brand. And you think about Hyundai, a lot of these companies that actually sell cars in the United States now have been in existence someplace else for many, many years. Not the case with Hyundai Engineering and Construction Company. It was actually founded in 1947, but they didn't really start, operating as a car company under Hyundai Motor Company until 1967. Their first model was something called the Cortina. I don't know if you remember that name, but that used to be a Ford name. It was the Ford Cortina was a very popular car in Europe and sold like hotcakes. They put Lotus engines in them at one point, and it became a great car for rallies and certain types of racing. But the Cortina was a very famous brand, but Ford Motor Company partnered with Hyundai, and that was in 1968, and let them use the Cortina name. But, you know, Hyundai really wanted to develop their own car, so they hired a guy named George Turnbull. That doesn't sound like a Korean name, does it? They hired this guy in February of 1974. That was when I graduated from high school. Anyway, the former managing director of a British company, Austin Morris. You ever heard of Austin Cars? Morris Cars, yeah. It was a division of British Leyland. And, you know, they kind of bit the dust, too. But anyway, a guy named John Simpson and Edward Chapman and another guy named John Crosswhite, they worked for BRM, and they all came together to develop cars for this Korean automotive maker. So you may think, Hyundai? Really? Korea? Yes. So's Kia. And Hyundai owns 33% of Kia, or some degree near that. Anyway, in 1975, their first car came out. It was called the Pony, and it was distributed by Mitsubishi, and exports began the following year to other countries, and Hyundai entered the British market in 1982. They sold a whopping 2,993 cars in their first year there. In 1984, Hyundai began exporting the Pony to Canada, but it did not pass emission standards here. So they were not allowed to bring it into the United States. Anyway, in 1985, the 1 millionth Hyundai car was built. So to give you a little perspective on that, when do you think the 1 millionth car was built by the Ford Motor Company? Well, you have to go back to December 10th, 1915, at the Rouge River plant in Detroit, which I have been at that place. You know, that was back when raw materials would float up the Rouge River and be dumped off right there on the side at the plant, and they would build cars from scratch. Just kind of like they do with biscuits at McDonald's, or is that Hardee's, where they make them from scratch. Well, that's what they did back then. Now, they don't do that anymore. There's a brand new plant there at the Rouge, and it's where they build F-150s. And I've toured that plant, and I can assure you, there's no flour, there's no yeast. Do you use yeast in biscuits? I don't know. But there's nothing. Everything comes in on big trucks, and it is assembled there. That's why they call it an assembly plant. So there's, you know, not a lot of similarities between Hyundai and their late start in the last century versus the Ford Motor Company. But and I can rest assured that more than likely the Hyundai Corporation will probably never be as big as the Ford Corporation. But, you know, who's counting? The first successful car for Hyundai in the United States was called the Hyundai Excel, and it was largely because of its affordability. Now, the company began to produce its own models with its own technology without borrowing stuff from other automakers in 1988. And the first car was the Sonata. And then by 1990, Hyundai reached the 4 million mark. So they were growing, and they were becoming more widely accepted. When somebody wanted to trade in a Hyundai at my Chevy dealership or Ford dealership or, you know, one of the other ones, we didn't sound the alarm bells. We just went ahead and appraised it, and the values were relatively stable. Still, you know, it had that perception by a lot of people. Now, if you worked at a Hyundai store or a Kia store, then you felt differently because people were coming in waves because of affordability. And as the perception of quality started to improve, and they really had a long way to go as far as getting there, but they eventually did. And, you know, now you've got cars like the Kia Telluride, the Hyundai Palisade. Those things are commanding sticker price plus, you know, as far as values are concerned. I mean, it's like a Telluride is like a prestige vehicle now for some people. Hey, I got a Telluride. I'm special. So I don't know if that's really true. But anyway, some people think that. So around 2000, Hyundai started getting notice in terms of initial quality, J.D. Power and Associates in North America. Hyundai is now one of the top 100 most valuable brands worldwide. So, you know, I don't know if they're like 100th or 99th, but they're in the top 100. They sponsor the World Cup. 2006, the South Korean government initiated an investigation of the head of Hyundai, and they suspected him of corruption, and that was bad when your CEO gets arrested and charged with embezzlement. He only took 100 billion South Korean won. You know, it's not a lot of money. I mean, 106 million, but 100 billion sounds like a lot. As a result, they replaced him with a guy named Kim Dong-jin, replaced him as the head of the company. Hyundai started an initiative to focus on improving vehicle dynamics. Now, this was the big deal with me with Hyundais. I was just never impressed with the driving dynamics of them. I was used to driving Mazdas. And, of course, Mazda has a phenomenal reputation from a drivability standpoint. Now, a lot of people don't know what that means, but that from a, let's call it engine performance in combination with handling, braking, all the things that you sense and that you do with the car in terms of driving it. The Mazdas have always been really good. I mean, the steering, the turn in, all aspects of that. Just go drive one. You'll see what I'm talking about. But, you know, they are, Hyundais and Kias were just very vanilla, kind of like a Toyota Camry, you know, just plain. But, you know, of course, none of them sell as well as the Camry. But Hyundai and Kia started to work on driving dynamics, and they have really improved. I'm not, you know, I am not a Hyundai dealer. You know that, right? I'm a Ford Nissan dealer in Greenville, Tennessee. But that's one of the reasons. I try to be unbiased and talk about, you know, some of my competitors. And I just started looking at Hyundai, and I was just curious as to when they got started and how they got started. And people have come to me and said, why don't you get a Hyundai franchise, Lenny? And I said, I've got all I want. I've got every single thing from a business standpoint. I really can't imagine any better franchise than, or combination of franchise than Ford and Nissan. Now, there are people out there say, well, I wouldn't buy anything but a Honda or a Toyota. And that's fine. I get it. But, you know, I'm very proud of both of these brands and what they do and what they represent and the quality of their products. And also, you know, primarily the way they complement each other and to be able to see to buy both either a Ford or a Nissan on the same lot. I see that as a distinct advantage for Gateway. So, you know, we're just going to ride it and we're going to continue to promote our brand. But we do like to talk about other companies and you know, and when it's flattering, I'm going to flatter them. You know, when it's not so flattering, I'm not going to flatter them. So that's just being truthful. You know, Lincoln Motor Company has an interesting history as well. We're going to talk about that tomorrow and how that got started. And actually, you know, the guy who developed Lincoln, who guess who it was named after? Yes, Abraham Lincoln. And his name was Henry Leland, and he actually also founded Cadillac, but Lincoln came first. So we'll talk about that tomorrow, but we'll be back right after this break. Okay, I'm back. You know, I kind of got that backwards. I apologize. Henry Leland was one of the original founders of Cadillac, which was a predecessor. I mean, he basically sold it to General Motors in 1909, and then he founded Lincoln in 1917. So he was a Cadillac guy and then jumped ship. So he started building Lincolns and caught the attention of the Ford Motor Company, which Ford was wanting to expand and become more of a luxury automaker, or at least have a luxury division to compete against Cadillac. So they purchased the company from Mr. Leland and didn't pay a lot for it. It was actually valued at about $16 million. And Ford was able to buy it for $8 million. So doesn't sound like a lot to pay for an automotive company, but it was a lot back in those days. Well, that's it. We'll talk about the rest of that and other things tomorrow on the next edition of My Car Guru. And I wish everybody a wonderful day, and we'll see you then.